Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Community in Depth, and we are thrilled to have on the phone with us today Council Member at Large Lori Brock. She's with the Hastings City Council, and she is here to recap their most recent January 4th meeting and just chat about a little bit of things behind the scenes at what goes on with the City of Hastings. Welcome. Thank you so much for calling in today, Lori. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, I got to tell you, at the meeting that I watched was so emotional because you had four people being sworn in. It didn't have the same oomph as it did probably being there in person, but it was really special all the same for us. So why don't you go ahead and tell people about your one new council member and the three that were reelected?
Yes, it's always very exciting when you're getting sworn in for a new term. And the results of the election were obviously in November, but we have four council members, three that are returning and one brand new to the Hastings City Council. Ward 1 council member Tina Fulch is returning. Ward 3 council member Lisa Liefeld is also returning, and Ward 4 council member Trevor Lund. And we have one new council member for Ward 2, who is Jen Fox, who probably people are familiar with because she is a very active and involved community member already. She was on Hedra, involved with Spiral Brewery as one of the co-owners. So we're very excited to have her join us at the Hastings City Council, and think her insights and her experiences will be very valuable to the collective pool of knowledge that we have in making decisions. It's a four-year term, and the way that our rotation works is that in 2 years, the mayor and the at-large council members will be on the ballot in the midterm election. So the ward council members are on the ballot when probably the highest number of people are voting. In fact, this year there was record numbers of people voting, so they have some pretty solid votes behind them in their favor if they've won the election. So, yes, they'll be in office for 4 years, and then in 2 years, the mayor and the two at-large council members, including myself, will have to decide if we're going to run for office again or be done.
So do you remember when you were sworn in for the very first time? What was that like?
Oh, it was so exciting. It was different because we were in person, and obviously with COVID, we're having Zoom virtual meetings, which does change some of the dynamics, but I was shaking. I was so excited, and I was trying to make sure that I said the right words for the oath, and your family is present, and everybody's excited that's been cheering for you and cheering you on during the long, arduous work of campaigning. So it is a very exciting moment, and it feels very rewarding for all the work that you've done up until that point to feel like, you know, it's come to something to fruition. So it is a very, very exciting event. And I'm really excited for these four. Obviously worked with three of them before, and so I'm really familiar with them, and also excited to get to know Jen and her style and her communication and all the information and knowledge that she has as well.
Part of what happens after you're sworn in and you start the new year, you're assigned to different committees and such. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. So at the beginning of every year, we have a recommendation memo that comes out from the mayor. So Mayor Mary puts together her list of council committee recommendations. And basically what council committees are working groups. So in any kind of board situation, if you've ever been on a board or worked in a group of people that makes decisions, sometimes you have topical groups that you break down into so that you can vet through some of the issues with more detail and spend more time thinking and talking with people who are involved or constituents or business partners, or sometimes it's a chamber of commerce, but it's a kind of a meeting before the meeting. So it's a group of people, the committee is a group of people that meet on a topic to kind of break down a request into smaller pieces and really vet it to make a recommendation to the full council. So the recommendation of the committee will go to the full council, and usually the council will do its best to support the recommendation that has come from the committee. So we have a variety of different committees that deal with different things. I'm going to try to remember what they all are, but they're things like utilities and administration, and we have public safety as a committee. We have planning that deals with kind of zoning and planning issues that will eventually go also to the planning commission. which is represented by citizens. So we have a lot of different interest groups, so topical groups that will hear some of the issues before they actually get to the full council. And the idea behind that is simply just so that we can break things down into and really get more in depth, so the full council as seven people doesn't have to know every single in and out of every single issue. We use the committee system to vet some of the things that we're going to talk about and come up with a recommendation. Or sometimes the committee isn't ready to make a recommendation to the council and needs more information or needs to meet several times, which does happen as well. So we have committees that usually rotate on a yearly basis. This year, these appointments that we have and the recommendations of the mayor will be for 2 years. So this set of recommendations that she provided should be ready for the next 2 years, which is kind of nice because changing committees every year can seem like a fresh start. It also can interrupt some momentum if you have a committee that's working really well together. And obviously we have a new member to the city council, so it gives her an opportunity to hear kind of different points of view and to sit with smaller groups of people and kind of hear the style, the communication of different council members, so she can kind of get to know us and we can get to know her, what our styles are. So it's really just a way of breaking things down into smaller pieces. And, you know, we've had conversations in the past about whether the committee system is useful or not useful. I think having been on the city council for, this is my 7th year, I find them extremely helpful. And that's just my opinion, just because I like to be able to process some of the information out loud with other people, and this gives us an opportunity to do that. You know, if there's an issue that is too big for just a committee to look at, we also do council workshops. And a lot of times we'll have council workshops with the full committee if it's a big topic, things like the budget. And those workshops are designed to give us information that we all need to know and we all need to hear at the same time. So if they're bigger items, a lot of times like big topics like transportation, the budget, we'll meet in a workshop format before a council meeting and have those discussions as a full council. So we have kind of two different mechanisms in order to break down information and share information with each other and discuss. So both the workshops and the council committees are useful for breaking things down, having a little bit more in-depth information than maybe what you see at the council meeting. So a lot of times at the council meeting, we have talked about an issue, especially something like the budget. We've probably talked about it 4, 5, 6 times between committees and workshops before we ever bring it to the public forum. And obviously committee meetings are open to the public as well. We just don't have a lot of people from the public attend those meetings. But typically we have links and availability when we're in person for anybody to attend those committee meetings as well. So it is open to the public, but it's just not as well attended maybe as a council meeting.
Lori, what do you think about Zoom meetings? How is it going for you as a council person?
It's hard. There's an efficiency about it that I like. There's something about being able to log on, you know, to eat dinner with my family and then quickly run into my office and log in without a lot of time to spare. So I like that part of it. The part that is hard is technology issues, if you're having some kind of problem with your internet, and there's something that is lost when you don't see someone in person. There is just a connectivity to people. I'm an extrovert, so I like to be around people. It fills me up. It fills my bucket. So it is harder to kind of have some of those just collegial conversations about family and dogs and significant others and what's going on in people's lives when you're in a Zoom format. Mm-hmm. We do get those opportunities in smaller settings. There's not as many social events going on right now as we would normally get together, sit at a table together, or, you know, a lot of the opportunities to kind of have the social relationship part are lost. And it's okay. I understand why we're doing it. I look forward to the time when we can be back in person and have just a normal conversation.
No kidding. You and me both. You know, you brought up something about there are links and everything for certain meetings. I know that on your January 4th meeting, after your swearing in, there was a closed door session. And what is a closed door meeting and what does that actually mean?
You know, we live and die by the Data Practices Act, which is basically a rule in the state of Minnesota that says if you're going to have a decision being made by a city council, it needs to be a meeting that is open to the public. And so we take that very seriously. And that's why our committees that I just talked about are three people and not four, because you can't have a quorum meeting together to talk about making a decision unless all council members are present and the meeting is public. So the Data Practices Act governs how we treat certain issues. And in the case of Monday night's meeting, we do have some exceptions to the Data Practices Act where we can meet in a closed-door session. And I'll tell you two of those that I can think of off the top of my head. And these are legalities. These are outlined in the Data Practices Act, and we have to have a specific reason why we're not meeting in public if we're doing so. So in the case of Monday night's meeting, we were meeting to talk about specific issues regarding some litigation that the city's involved in. So we have an exception to the Data Practices Act that essentially is an attorney-client privilege exception. So what that means is we're talking to our attorney about an ongoing matter, and if we had that information out in the public, it's possible that another party or an opposing party or someone else could get information about the case that would be damaging to us as a city. So we do protect ourselves and those conversations that we're having with our attorneys through the attorney-client privilege exception. Another situation sometimes that people will feel, I know this has been confusing in the past, is an employee who is a public employee, there's certain information about their employment that is private and some that is public. And some information, just because an employee works for a city, doesn't mean all their information about everything about them is in the public domain. There are things about their employment that are private, and that's to protect the employee. And so sometimes there are conversations about private data for a specific employee that can also be a closed-door session and can be is an exception to the Data Practices Act. Obviously, that's protecting the person and their information and their history and things that are inside their employee file that they wouldn't necessarily want distributed amongst the entire community. And so I think these protections, the two especially that I mentioned, are very valid. And I know people wonder, well, why do we have these? Shouldn't everything be out in the open and transparent? And I would say, yes, 90% of the time that is true. But there are these specific reasons why we want to protect a case or a piece of litigation or an individual's as an employee's privacy. So we do have closed door meetings sometimes to discuss sensitive things like that.
Tell us about the City Light project and when can we expect to see this, please?
So I don't know what the timing is on it exactly. I know that we discussed the lighting of the Levy Park and specific pieces of that area being lit up with lights. And I was on the dissenting side, so we'll say that. I didn't vote in favor of it. And the only reason was because it was a very rushed process. I fully understand, and I have listened to downtown business owners who are very concerned about the traffic in January and February. And our policy, I feel like, as a city council has been that we do want to make positions and decisions that are supportive of downtown businesses, which I think we have. And in some cases, it's been great, and some things that we've tried haven't been great. But I think we're all on the same page that we understand having a restaurant, having a small retail establishment during this time is very difficult. And the people that are running these establishments downtown are friends and our neighbors, and this is their livelihood. And so we take that very seriously. The light project, it's exciting. It just seemed to me as a council member ill-timed because it's obviously after the holiday season. And we are looking at a three-year contract. So we are looking at working with a vendor who is wanting to do this same work for 3 years. And I'm hoping that it's fantastic and it looks great. But maybe it is the attorney in me that gets a little nervous about signing multi-year deals when we haven't seen the final product. So I'm hoping that it looks great and that the park is lit up and it's wonderful and it looks beautiful, which I'm sure it will. And what we're hoping is that that will help aid in some other events that either the chamber or the Downtown Business Association will plan. So it will kind of be like the backdrop for what I hope is the main event, which are either carriage rides or date packages or other events and activities that are going on. This will contribute to the ambiance as a small thing that the city can contribute. And I know that's what the ask was, and there were 5 council members that agreed with that, and so we voted for it. And I know that it's going to go forward as far as I know, but I don't know what the exact timeline is on that yet. but I know it was hoping to be done in the next couple weeks. I just haven't seen an update. John Hinsman is a staff person who is working on it. He updates us regularly on important items such as this, but I don't know the exact timing on when that's going to go up.
You know, Lori, I really appreciate your honesty on that. And you gave us some background that I don't think people really know about. And as a council person at large, you really need to think about all of Hastings, not just one specific area.
Yeah, and I do recognize that our downtown is a possible tourism draw. And we do talk about that a lot. We did invest a lot of money down there for the Riverfront Renaissance Project. And I put over $8 million into that area. And so it is an important area. I don't think that minimizes that other areas of Hastings are important. I know it's hard for people to understand, why do you keep putting money into downtown? Well, why are we hanging up planters and why are we putting up lights? And I think the idea is that, you know, in this time where people are looking for things to do, is it possible that if we light up the riverfront, this will draw people to our riverfront park, which is very beautiful just as it is, and allow them to kind of trickle into other businesses and restaurants and experience what Hastings has to offer. So that's what I'm hoping happens, and I hope and pray that that's what happens. We can't compare ourselves to Hudson, and we can't compare ourselves to Stillwater. I think that next year we have to talk about more strategically planning what the holidays look like and maybe getting ahead of some of these things. So we could do them earlier in November than in January. That was one of my hangups, is just let's plan out for next year and figure out what we can do together ahead of time. And a lot of times in these other cities, I've looked into funding, you know, how is Hudson's light display by the river funded? How was Stillwater's funded? There was a piece that was from the city. There was a piece from the chamber, and then a lot of times there were private donations involved as well, people who wanted to invest in beautifying their downtown. So I think it is a community effort. It can be a city-led effort, but I think it is important for us to not point fingers at each other and start collaborating earlier so that we can strategically approach something like putting up lights in the downtown so that we can do it in a way that's quality and beautiful and cost-effective and fair and all the things that we want.
I love it. Councilmember Lori Brox of the Hastings City Council, we thank you for your time today, and we really, really appreciate you giving us all this insight. And you are listening to another edition of Community in Depth on AM 1460 and FM 97.7 KDWA in Hastings.